Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Roker Report podcast in association with the Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen. It's Gav back after Sunderland's draw away at Swansea City. Joining me as always is Chris and, well, let's get into it, Chris, because it's a funny one, this. I don't know where we're going to go with it, but it's a funny old game, football, isn't it? And having a look at the result, you might think, oh, Sunderland got a draw away from home, point clean sheet. Doesn't sound too bad, that. But, yeah, the story of the game perhaps changes your perspective on that. And, of course, we're here to talk about it. So, how are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm all right. It's weird, isn't it? It's one of these goalless draws that everyone's diving into. You know, there's normally a goalless draw and everyone goes, oh, it was 0-0, it's crap. Yeah. It's one of them. But everyone's like diving right into this one. It's weird. It's like, but it's like everyone's getting into like super. I know. Look, we're sitting here talking about it, analyzing it. So you know, we're probably as bad as anyone else. But everyone's getting really deep on this, like a 0-0 draw, and everyone's going to town on it. And it's it seems like it's a 0-0 that people are trying to take a lot from, which is odd.
It is, and I think the reason for that is possibly, and well, not possibly, it's almost certainly because Swansea had 10 men for most of the game. And I actually think, and I've said this a few times to people when talking about the game and stuff, I actually think if it's 11v11 for 90 minutes, we win that 2-0. I think I said 2-0 to you. I think it was that comfortable up until the point they got the red card. But a red card changes everything because all it did was it made them put 10 men behind the ball. And we'll get into it, but I think you've got to give Swansea credit first and foremost. They defended brilliantly. Yeah. They were outstanding. I thought if you're their, you know, a fan of Swansea or their manager, you're absolutely buzzing about the way they played because they were just excellent defensively. They put their bodies on the line multiple occasions. They were organised. Even though we tried to trick them with, you know, tactical changes and we made, you know, a lot of substitutes during the game, they basically just held their line. And you know, yes, and we will get into it. We had plenty of chances to score. But at the same time, I think Swansea were great. And, you know, when you look at it, they missed a penalty. Can you imagine if we'd lost this? If we'd been sat here talking about a 1-0 defeat, haven't played like that? I mean, and Mowbray said that. I listened to one of his interviews after the game. And again, something else we'll get into. But he mentioned that and was keen to point out, you know, this feels bad, but imagine how bad it would have felt if they'd scored that penalty. And the hero of the day really was Anthony Patterson for saving it because Dan Neil highlighted this in his BBC Newcastle interview after the game, but he highlighted that Patterson has done this so many times. He didn't have the stats and I don't have them in front of us either, but it feels like he saved almost every penalty he's faced as Sunderland's number one. His record of saving penalties has been outstanding. And to be honest, when Jamal Lowe ran up to the ball, and I seen his run up and he like took his time and he stuttered up to it, I thought, he's missed this. Because it was just too complicated. If he just runs up and belts it, he probably scores. But he gives Patterson a chance to see what he's doing. And that was it, really. You know, he saved it. But the story of the game is ultimately about how we didn't convert a chance despite having a ridiculous amount of shots and chances to score and crosses across the box. Got them in front of us now, the stats. 25 shots, 3 on target. I mean, it says it all, doesn't it?
Well, it doesn't. It tells part of the story, but I mean, as you called it, I mean, if we're talking in general terms about the game, Swansea did what we didn't against Middlesbrough when we went down to 10 men. They had a perfect game plan. They changed it. And actually, the time we should have took advantage of it was the period even before the sending off, but it was before half time, because yes, they were decent after the sending off before half time, but they got in at half time and their manager sorted them out. I thought Michael Duff got them in at half time. He earned his coin at half time. He did a job on us. He got them organised. They came out with five at the back. They put men behind the ball. So you're talking about 23 shots, three on target. Yes, it's not a fantastic ratio. It is crap on paper. But the problem is with the way Swansea set up, and as you said, credit to them, the way they set up, five at the back, pack the midfield. We then kept getting, we either got to the byline and got slightly, we kind of got in behind them, but they had so many players back and in around the box and, you know, in the important areas that it was tough for us to pick a pass out, or we were poor in picking a space out and picking a pass out, or we ended up resorting to long range shots.
Yeah.
So that kind of tells the story that, yes, it's not brilliant, 23 shots and three on target and all this sort of stuff, but we struggled to get in those chances where we could get that shot in on target and we could kind of have a clear-cut chance. And that was the way Swansea set up. But like I said, I think we should have taken advantage of the dominance in the first half. I mean, I know it's obvious to say, but...
Well, we could have been 3-0 up before they even had the man sent off. So it's that. I think Mowbray mentioned that. You know, you have three chances and when it's 11v11...
But again, let's give credit to their keeper, by the way, because we're talking about chances. Mm-hmm. And we, it's not as if we wasted them as such. You know, like, I thought Roberts' chance, you know, when he cut inside and it kind of hit off the post, and I thought that was a great save. And actually the save from Clark, you know, that was about five minutes before the red card.
Well, that one was interesting because the ball comes from the right-hand side. I think it's Hume. Whips a ball across the face of goal and Roussens runs too late. And it's like the ball's clearly for him. If Roussens runs better, he runs onto it. But instead, if it goes to Clark, and it is a good save. But it's again, it's about those fine margins that Mowbray keeps talking about. In that occasion, the ball fizzed across where Roussens was, but it was like he ran a little bit too early. So you know, and that's maybe why that's where we're struggling in terms of getting on the end of these chances, is that it's just. Everything seems to be great until a point, and then it's like we do look toothless, which seems weird being one of the top scorers in the league, but it is a problem, isn't it, that we're not getting goals from centre forwards.
But there's two things to take from that Clark chance, actually, from my point of view, when you look at it. The fact that we did what we did down the right-hand side, and I know we've been doing this thing where Hume tucks in as an extra midfielder, and there's been games, actually the Norwich game, I thought the amount of tackles that Hume made in the middle of the park in that game was brilliant and it worked fine. But sometimes, I mean, in a scenario where you're dominating the opposition and you want to stretch the play, and especially when the ball goes out to Patrick Roberts, sometimes you want a fullback to be a fullback.
Yeah,
and you want him to go past the winger, and you want him to go on an overlap and give him an option, because that, I mean, if Sir, you know, we've talked about Serkan doing it on the other side when he's on the left, it gives Clark room because that run takes a player away.
Yeah,
but if the fullback's not there, if he's trying to cover inside and be a central midfielder, he's trying to be a defensive midfielder, then we lose that. And you saw as soon as we got a fullback going beyond Roberts. He used him, and Hume was in, and Roberts did the business, because if he's got runners ahead of him, Roberts will pick them out. He's that good a player, and Hume was in acres of space. And obviously when he gets to that byline, I think if it's not Roussen's second appearance or in the start 11, and if Roussen had already been here, you know, if he'd had, I don't know, 30, 50 games under his belt, the connection's there, and Hume knows where Roussen's going to be, Roussen knows where Hume's going to put the ball, and that's a goal.
Yeah.
And he doesn't, obviously the players with Roussen only making his second appearance, and all the strikers, really, it comes back to the point of a striker getting a run in the team.
Yeah, yeah.
That players know how to react to them.
Yeah, well, people keep asking what's the solution to all of this, and honestly, I think it's just sticking with Roussen. I think he made some good runs, and he seems to be doing all the right things. I mean, the chance he had in the first half was the best chance of the game for me, where he gets slipped in behind. He's one-on-one with the goalkeeper, and he he sort of loses his foot in a bit, and yeah, he opens his body up to shoot, and he puts it wide of the post, and he was kicking himself after that for a good 5 minutes. Yeah. Every time the camera panned to him, he was talking to himself, mumbling away. He was punching the ground when just after it, you know, he was because he realized how big an opportunity that was to get off and running.
Yeah,
I agree with what you just said. By the way, I think if you give him a run of games, that synergy is only going to build up, and he will score. I'm honestly really confident with him and the team. I look at him and I think he's got something about him actually. But I'll come into this a bit more because I mentioned it earlier. Mowbray's comments after the game. I listened to two interviews: the one he did with the club, and the one he did with BBC Newcastle. And I don't know about you, but to me, it felt like this is probably the first time I've heard him sort of push a bit of responsibility to the forwards, particularly the strikers, in that he was asked about the missed opportunities, and he said, well, we're doing everything right in training, and if you look at Clark and Roberts, they're getting in good positions and they're putting it across the box, but the strikers have to get on the end of it. And it was the first time I've heard him say that. He actually name-checked Roosan a couple of times in terms of, you know, his chances that he had and all the rest of it. And I don't know about you, but I find that really interesting that Mowbray's going down that road now. I feel like he's sort of shrugging his shoulders now and going, I don't know what else to do here. Mm-hmm. Like I've tried everything I can to get these lads into the team and get the rest of the team working for them. And it just sort of, I don't know, he didn't come out and full on blame them for not winning the game, but it did feel as though that there's been a sort of change in attitude with him towards that position in general. It's going to be interesting to see where he goes from here in terms of selection, because we keep talking about Mayenda, and I know he's not played a game yet, but I can't get this out of my head that he's just waiting for him to be fit. And I've heard him talk up other players and talk them up because he really rates them. I don't get that impression when he talks about Roosan and he talks about Burstow and he talks about him here. Like, there's something not right there, and I don't think he's having them, if I'm honest. So I don't know. I'm presuming you heard what he had to say.
Yeah. Well, look, it follows a theme this week with Tony Mowbray, and I was really quite shocked how much he came out during the week and laid into Hamia publicly.
Yeah.
I was genuinely a bit shocked because he's always hinted at stuff, and it seemed like this week, because of all the chatter with the strikers and our, you know, lack of a main focal point. And look, we've said it on pods before that we're obvious. I mean, it doesn't take a genius to work out that we're a 15, 20 goal striker short of fighting for the top two in this division. It's as simple as that. I'm not saying we'd getting off to as good a start as Leicester or Ipswich, but we'd be solidly in that pack behind them, I think, if we had a 15, 20 goal striker. But it seems like Mowbray has, I don't know, I think he's hit a point this week where, with all the chatter, everybody outside, the media, you know, fans, whatever, social media, probably doesn't read that, I guess, but, you know, talking about the strikers, the whole conversation is about strikers. And he seemed like he's wanted to get stuff off his chest this week.
Yeah.
The whole Hamia conversation, that he came out and publicly said, and described almost in detail what he's getting wrong. And he's, you know, so you're talking an 18, 19 year old striker who's come over from Portugal, and you're talking like that in the press. And it seemed like he almost seemed upset with his behaviour. Obviously, Mowbray comes from a place where that was never accepted, and that was never acceptable in the dressing rooms he was in. And I just think he lost it a little bit. And then when it came to the match, you know, 23 shots, wingers getting to the byline, fullbacks getting to the byline, and we haven't scored. And I think then he's just followed that on, because he looked absolutely sick as a chip after the game. I mean, he looked a bit down about it. I mean, you know, we all kind of were the goalless draw that we had that much, like we dominated that much. He's had a thing this week, and I think he's kind of right on the edge of really kind of losing it with the strikers now, because he's desperate. But the thing is, he sees, and he'll read the same stats as everyone else, and he knows his side better than we do, that we're not far away, we're that close. I mean, Michael Duff came out after the game, said we're one of the best sides in the division. The Leicester manager said one of the best sides in the division. All we need is that striker to score those 15, 20 goals. We're a different side, we're in a different position in the table. And Tony Mowbray knows it. And he's now using any tools he's got in his locker in terms of psychology, because they're probably, as you said, they've done the work on the training pitch. It's all now getting into the players' heads to try and get them improved. But just quickly on Roussin, you said his movement's fantastic, you know, much improved in terms of what we had in the earlier part of the season. But the best thing I like about him is when he gets the ball to feet, he wants to turn and get in behind. He spins off defenders. And we haven't had that this season, where we haven't had much opportunity to play a ball into feet because strikers haven't presented themselves. He gets into decent positions, and he likes it when a defender's up behind him because he rolls them. He won a couple of free kicks that way. He looked dangerous. He looked like he was going to turn them. And considering, again, look, considering that he's only... And we said as well that it would be a completely different test for him because Norwich were crap and we were at home. And it was, but he still showed some good things. And I just think he's going to be one of them. The more games he plays, the better he'll get.
Yeah, just on Mowbray, do you think he's taking it a bit too far with what he's saying publicly? Because I do, personally, and I refer back to that stuff with him here. I just don't know what benefit there is in telling the world he's basically unprofessional.
Yeah.
When he's that young. I my opinion is those conversations need to stay behind closed doors. Like, I do not doubt he's had them. You know, I'm sure him has been made very much aware of what he needs to change. But then when you've got like the local press asking you the same questions and you've then got an opportunity to talk about it, who does it benefit, really?
Yeah.
We don't need to know that him here turns up last to training and he's the first one out the door. And I don't have a problem with Mowbray getting at him for those things, because I think it's totally right. Young players need to be reminded constantly about how to be as professional as they can. But I don't think the press need to know about it. I don't think we need to know about it. You know, if this was a 28, 29-year-old lad, we'd sign for a lot of money, then I might feel differently about it. But when it's a kid, I don't know. I feel like sometimes he contradicts himself in a way, because to me, if you're going to talk about a player in that manner, how are they getting on the pitch every week? You know, he's coming off the bench, he's bringing them on off the bench and things like that. And I'm like, well, if he's doing everything wrong, like you seem to be suggesting, then I don't understand how he keeps getting on the pitch. I feel similarly, you know, when he talks about Ekwa, he likes to remind everybody that he's quite lazy and laid back and all the rest of it. And I think, well, but he's putting the performances in on a Saturday. I don't need to know, really. You don't need to caveat. When someone, like, to be honest, that one pissed us off a little bit because he was caveating praise for Ekwa. Like, the guy asking the question was talking about how well he'd played. And he went, well, I have to slap him before he goes out and remind him how to work out. I don't need to hear that. What do you think about just his general tone in these interviews? Because I've got to be honest, like, I just want him to shut up. I want him to stop telling us all these things.
Well, you're right. It's a complete contradiction. Because, like you said, when I heard that, I thought he's lost it. He's lost it with Amir. Like, he's completely... You know, week after week, day after day, Hamia's got this attitude. And this is just the impression I got from Mowbray talking, that he's got this attitude and Tony Mowbray has tried everything. And now it's his last resort, because it has to be, really, to dig out an 18, 19-year-old kid in public that the way he's behaving. That when nobody really knows about it, it's not like everyone was, like, rumours were flying around, but he's come out and just opened up about it. And it's got to be your last resort to get a player motivated. It has to be, because you're not just going to come out straight away and just say, oh, yeah, he's been here 2 days, he's really unprofessional. So that has to come after a prolonged length of time where Hamia's just constantly had this attitude and done all of this stuff. And like you said, but if he has, you're absolutely right, if he has, then the carrot that he's dangling is a place in the match day squad. You behave like this, you don't get a place on the bench. It's as simple as that. And then, you know, we're talking, I mean, when did he come on? I'm trying to look, you know.
It was 55 minutes, I think.
Yeah, so it was 10 minutes into the second half. And if Burstow's really professional in training and he's busting a gut, you bring him on.
Yeah.
You don't reward Hamia with behaving like, you know, whatever he's doing behind the scenes. If he's that bad that you've dug him out in public in midweek, you don't give him 35 minutes on a Saturday. But then does that say, you know, nil-nil, 10 men, does that tell you how desperate Mowbray was for a goal, that he's going to bring someone who he thinks got the wrong attitude. I mean, none of it really makes sense. It doesn't tie in. Like, for me, he would only dig a meal like out like that if he's not going to be in the match day squad, so it explains it.
Yeah.
But if you go in like that and then pick him, it doesn't make sense. So I genuinely don't know. I mean, as you said, the only straw I can clutch at why Mowbray did it is that he's lost it with him and it's his last resort to go public with it. But at the same time, don't reward him with minutes on the pitch, because Burstow and Amir are put in the same bucket. Like, they're both kind of struggling. But if Burstow's got the right attitude, he's got to be kind of at the front of the queue. So yeah. I don't know. None of it really makes sense.
Yeah, well, we're talking about that. So he changed the shape of the team entirely because he clearly felt it wasn't working, whatever we were doing. He took off Roos and brought on him, yeah. Which I felt was a bit strange, because when you need a goal, obviously you would like to think, you know, get two up there, have two strikers on the pitch. Instead, we went with bringing off Job as well and bringing off Huggins and sort of went with a back three, which made Clark play like a left wing back, although he didn't have a lot of defending to do. But it was, I guess it was sort of the case of trying to get a load of attack midfield players on and create chances that way. But to be honest, Pritchard, he was sort of on the pitch to give Clark a hand on the left, and I presume to open up the space. You know, if he's out there on the left-hand side occupying somebody, it gives Clark a little bit of room to fashion a chance, maybe. I didn't understand the Dak substitution, if I'm honest.
I was just about to say that.
Just, he didn't do anything, to be honest. He didn't offer it. And this isn't the first time I felt this way about Bradley Dak. I'm sort of waiting to work out the point of him, really.
Yeah.
Like, we know he was Mowbray's signing, and he maybe tried to justify it to himself why he was brought in. But other than that goal against Southampton, we've not really seen much. And she stayed on the bench. I know he's been injured.
Yeah, is he fit? Like, if he's fully fit, surely he comes on before Dak, because he looks like a player who can unlock a door when, you know, you've got players behind the ball.
Yeah. I mean, I presume it's down to trust. Mowbray trusts Dak. He knows he can score goals, but I'm not seeing it, if I'm honest. Yeah. You know, so yes, he made a lot of substitutes, but he totally changed the shape of the team. Ballard sort of limped off and Serkin came on. But I was surprised how late it took to bring Serkin on. Like, in my head, I was thinking, right, I'm trying to rationalise these changes. Pritchard's been brought on and he basically played out on the left most of the time with Clark. So I'm thinking, right, he's been put there to support Jack Clark. But then I'm thinking, but, you know, if you have Serkin on the pitch, he can do that. And he can get beyond Clark and he can put crosses into the box. That's what I was. What my thought when I was thinking, right, we keep two strikers on the pitch, bring on Cirque and get some more bodies out wide who can cross the ball left-footed and get the ball into the box that way as well, because it was all coming down the right, really. And we pick apart these things all the time, but, you know, it was just interesting that those were the changes he made. I know we've spent quite a lot of time in recent weeks mulling over the subs he makes, because, to be honest, on the whole, it doesn't feel like the subs he's making are working. Necessarily, I think we're in a bit of a period where we're like looking for impact from the bench and looking for Mowbray to change something. And I think, you know, against Norwich, his subs were largely good, but in general this season they've been a bit, I don't know, they've been a bit strange. Like, I just thought these were strange changes. Thought it was very early to make changes in the game. He'd obviously decided at half time he was going to do it sort of 10 minutes in. We look very slow with Pritchard and Dak up there, and I don't know, I think Roosan probably feels hard done by it that we've come off, because he didn't do anything wrong. Like, I know he's not, maybe they've looked at it and thought, yeah, he's not played a lot of football. He, you know, we don't want to keep him on for too long. But 56 minutes, I think he could have been the difference in some of those, particularly as the game went on, as the balls were fizzing across the box. You do need people with a striker's instinct. I know he missed a couple of chances earlier in the game, but that's not to say he wouldn't have been in the right place later in the game. And we lost that from him just not being there, I thought. And funny changes, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, as 10 minutes into the second half, you know, it was obvious Mowbray just thought, well, nothing's changing and we're not, you know, he needs to freshen something up. Like I said, the Dak one for me didn't make much sense, other than he wanted to change the shape. But for me, if Oshish is fully fit, he gets the nod before Dak. For me, you know, that was all about Tony Mowbray wanting Dak on the pitch. Like you said, all down to trust. He knows him and all that sort of stuff.
Mm.
The Hamia substitution, I don't mind so much because when he brought, because he did at the same time he's brought Pritchard on. So it was like, you know, a triple substitution, Dak, Pritchard, Hamea. And although I don't disagree with you when you say two up front, because I'm old and I like two strikers up front. I want the world to go back to when everyone played two strikers up front and big man, little man and all that sort of stuff. I want the world to go back to that time. But at the same time, he's kind of changed the dimension of our play where he's got Pritchard on. He gets a striker in the box who, to be fair, in preseason was winning some headers in the box. And if we're going to start putting the balls high and, you know, getting on people's heads and knocking the balls in, then it kind of makes sense. I don't mind him trying something different to break the deadlock. It's one of them. I mean, he rolls the dice. The one that sticks out for me mainly is the Dak one. Other than that, I can kind of see what he's trying to do.
Yeah, I'm saying this all in hindsight. If it come off, I wouldn't be questioning his sub. The reason I am is it's because it didn't work. But I just think when you this is a very unique situation. They've got 10 men. They've got no interest in getting out of the box. I'm just thinking, you know, we've got enough ball players on the pitch. We're going to get crosses in. We're going to create chances. So why not have more strikers on the pitch? Even, you know, Burstow never even got on. I just think it was strange that we finished the game that way, with like Hamir as the only striker on the pitch, despite needing a goal. I just felt like with the chances we were creating, with, you know, getting the ball wide, working around the box, I would have personally got Sirkin on a lot earlier and tried it that way, you know, get more crosses in, because Sirkin does that. Yeah. He gets beyond, he puts balls in. But yeah, all coulda, woulda, shoulda, really. The other thing I want to mention was, just to scale back a little bit, going back to what Mowbray said after the game, and it was more so in the interview we did with Nick Barnes on BBC, is the fact that we're going to be without both of our centre-halves next week because they both picked up yellow cards, which takes them both up to 5 yellows for the season and means they miss the next game. They're automatically banned. To be honest, he proper laid into them. I felt like that's the most I've heard him lay into 09, certainly, and Ballard, actually. Just basically saying that, you know, two lads with their experience and know-how should have managed it better. And he said that he'd spent a bit of time before he'd came out to do the interviews talking with them about that and the fact that they were daft to get booked. Because it puts us in a bad position next week. It means he's got to totally change the defence. That's been the defensive pairing all season. And now next week he's got to go with something new. And he basically questioned them and their mentality for making tackles they didn't need to make. I think 09's booking came right near the end of the game. It was like 90 plus 3. So all he had to do was, you know, finish out the next couple of minutes and 09's playing next week, but now he's not. Fair enough in this case, I think, because... And do you know what it is as well? Nick Barnes pointed this out. You know, 09 probably could have been booked a few more times before then. he gave the penalty away, which we haven't really talked about. You know, needless tussling in the box. You know me, I'm the biggest fan of Luke 09 there is. But that was stupid. That was stupid. You didn't need to put his hands on him. And I think anybody now watching our footage before games, you know, upcoming opponents, they're going to be like, right, if you're on 09 on corners, just let him wrestle it at the ground, because he does it too often. That's the first time he's been caught, properly caught, but he does it too often. And then to get booked right at the end of the game was daft, because actually I thought he played really well in the match. Like, the way he plays out from the back, I don't think there's another centre-half in the Championship as good as him at receiving the ball and knowing where to put it. And link, because he's a midfield player by trade, so he's naturally good with the ball. He works really hard on those things off the pitch. So I thought his all-round performance was actually really, really decent. And he could have scored as well. That one that deflected onto him forced a really good save out the goalkeeper. Yet we're coming away and we're talking about this because, rightly so, he let himself down a couple of times in the game with things that were nothing to do with the actual play. It was wrestling somebody on a corner and then getting himself a daft yellow with minutes to spare on the clock. So in this instance, I think Mowbray is justified in criticising him because you expect better. But at the same time, I'm kind of looking at it through the eyes. I was looking at the other stuff and I'm thinking, well, you've just said that you had this conversation with them in the dressing room. Did you need to come out and berate them publicly? You know, it's a tough one because he's obviously pissed off straight after the game. Yeah. Having realised, look, I've got both my centre-halves missing next week after that performance as well. he's, you know, I kind of understand the frustration from him.
Well, look, you know how much I like O-9. I'm not his number one fan, because that mantle goes to you, and I'm not quite at your levels. But I think, look, he's been fantastic, you know. And as he said, I mean, I've always banged the drum for how he dictates the tempo of how we play out from the back, and I like him in there. But let's start with the penalty. That has been a penalty that has been waiting to be given for weeks.
Yeah.
Weeks and weeks and weeks, probably since the start of the season. One thing that there's been a huge change in O-9 this season, and he looks different after the summer. He seems to have worked so much on like his upper body strength, and he looks, we talked about this earlier in the season, and he just looks different. His frame looks different, but he looks a yard slower than he was a year ago. Like he seems to have gone for bulk. He seems to be wanting to be really strong, which is fine. That's what a centre-half should be. But I think because of it, he's lost half a yard of pace. But let's focus on the penalty. Like I said, that penalty could have been given in any game, I think, this season, because that's happened. A moment like that of a corner has happened. Maybe, though, I was thinking that some of it is coming out of desperation of how we defend corners. Like they want to be so good because we've had so much criticism. Look, they've probably talked about it for hours and hours, meetings, talking about defending corners, out on the training pitch. This is how we want to defend corners. And I think you saw Ballard as well, because Ballard was in that mix where they were pushing each other and shoving each other and all that sort of stuff. And I think there's a proper desperation to improve on defending corners. And I think some of it comes out of that, where they just want to be better, but it makes them cross the line. And there was no way we could. It even went beyond the normal kind of pushing and pulling. He basically just chucked him to one side, and you can't get away. If the referee gets a sniff of that, it's a penalty, and it absolutely was. But yeah, I mean, the yellow cards. I mean, I'm not. You know, we talked about the red card. I mean, I'm not convinced either of them. I'd be absolutely fuming if a Sunderland player got sent off for two tackles like that for two yellow cards. So the referee was giving them. You see that, you know, you adjust your game. You watch what you're doing.
Well, Mowbray sort of hinted at the referee maybe wanting to even it up, which is why he took Roussin off.
Maybe there was that. I mean, like you said, that
Roussin had been booked for something. That's another thing he dug him out for, actually. He said it was stupid, because what he did was he stood in the way of a quick free kick and got a yellow card. In the first half,
yeah.
But he was kind of do you know, as when we were talking about that before, I totally forgot about that, but I still would have left him on the pitch. I don't, you know, when we're totally on top, you're not going to be, you shouldn't really be giving yellow cards away when they're not wanting the ball. When are you really in a position to tackle? You know, that's what frustrates us about that 0-9 one at the end of the game. And like Mowbray said, you know, there's no need for it, really.
No, well, 0-9 went over to the lad and almost patted him on the back, almost as like, yeah, we've seen a few of them, mate, don't worry, like crap decisions, like,
yeah.
When the lad got sent off. So 0-9 was kind of, yeah, that this ref's a bit weird and he's going to give some dodgy yellow cards. So 0-9 saw what was going on. The one other thing I wanted to mention about 0-9, and I'd just skip ahead slightly, we can come back, but just in the second half, just because we're on the subject of 0-9, with all the attacking players on the pitch, what's Luke O'Neill doing taking free kick from the edge of the box?
That was odd, yeah. I mean, Pritchard wasn't on the pitch, so they may be looking. But you had Clark and Roberts.
He hit the bar from like the same, almost the same position, yeah, in the first half. And then suddenly Luke O'Neill smashing it over the crossbar. And then you saw some of the players' reactions. It was like, oh, you know, what did he take that for? I just didn't get it. It was just a bizarre moment.
Unless he's been smashing them in training or something, and...
Well, you'd like to think so, yeah. Or else he just, I'm the captain and I'm having this one. I don't know, yeah. It's just weird.
To be honest, I've often thought, would he be any good at free kicks? Because he does spend that long working on things. You wouldn't be surprised if he's actually half decent, but that was poor. I mean, it was a weird... Do you know what it is, though? Where he took it from was even a good free kick take, I might struggle to get it up and down from there. But he sort of like side-footed it straight over the bar. It looked like a centre-half taking a free kick, didn't it?
Yeah, I didn't get it.
It was interesting as well. I was watching, just the side note, I was watching Match of the Day, and Lewis Dunk took one for Brighton, and he actually forced a really good save out of Pickford. So maybe it's just a new thing that centre-halves have started taking free kicks. I don't know. Remember David Luiz taking them? He was quite good at them, wasn't he? The old knuckleball technique. Anyways,
or nine wasn't.
Yeah, we're going off tangent slightly here. But yeah, I mean, to be honest, the story of the game was just that. It was just frustration. Afterwards, my assessment mainly was that I actually thought we did just about, collectively, I think we did just about everything we could to try and force something, and it just didn't happen. You know, we changed the way we set up. It wasn't for lack of effort, to put it that way. You know, we've got to talk about the ones where we came close. You just mentioned there, Clark hitting the bar from a free kick. Sort of, you know, scraped the top of it. But the one where we came closest was the Abdullah Bar shot, where we had
that was brilliant.
Yeah, he played like a nice little 1-2. I think with Roberts or Neil, I can't remember, but it was lovely. It was a left-footed curler from sort of an odd position, but it gutted. It didn't go in because it was a fantastic strike. But to be honest, the fact that we're talking about that sort of tells you the story of the game. Like, we were running out of ideas and we were just trying different things. And like I say, I don't necessarily criticise the players for that. I think we just looked a bit desperate. And one of the things Dan Neil and Mowbray both talked about after the game was that we need to work on how we deal with going down to 10 men. Because it's not the first time where a team's went down to 10 men against us and we've not really had an answer for it. And I said it, I think it was one of the first things I said when we started recording. If this had been 11v11, I think we would have won. We don't seem to have a plan for how we break down teams with 10 men, which when we played Middlesbrough the other week, they decimated us and clearly had an idea of what to do. We just didn't in this.
Yeah. Well, again, I mean, back to where we started, you have to talk about Swansea a little bit. But I actually go back to the QPR game. Like, what we did against QPR, which I didn't really see us doing as much in this game, was we made the pitch as wide as possible. We basically had players who were hugging the touchline to stretch their players out.
That all comes down to the subs, doesn't it? When you look at it, he brought on Dak, he brought on Pritchard, he didn't bring on Cirque until late. We did that. Like, exactly. When we were talking about it before, that was what I was thinking. I'm thinking, well, he's brought on loads of number 10s, loads of sort of central players. Yeah, we didn't stretch it enough.
What we did against QPR, that's the way to play against 10 men. And it was same as what Borough did to us. They had that, I can't remember, they had a winger who basically hugged the touchline.
Isaiah Jones on the right
wing.
Yeah,
and he did us every time because they stretched the play and then switched it. So it was always left a one-on-one every time. And that's what you do. You overload. And actually, just after the sending off, we actually started off doing that a little bit. Like in that first half, like the 10, 15 minutes after, we actually did that and we had an overload on a couple of times on the right-hand side because we switched it quickly and we spread the play and we stretched it. And Swansea weren't quite as organised then because they were playing, trying to work it out as they went along until they got in at half-time. But we started doing that. And then second half, we kind of stopped doing that. And as you said, we ran out of ideas by trying to do the same thing time and time again. And then when you said when we changed the system, you go down the centre and you kind of, it gets a bit muddled. But yeah, I mean, look, we did it before against QPR. QPR weren't as organised as Swansea. I thought Swansea were much better than them. But having said that, we didn't look like we had a plan to pull Swansea's players out of position. And that's what you need to do when you're a man up.
Yep. And we just didn't find a way through. There was 9 minutes of added time. We kept plugging away. Like I said, we had that late chance where 0-9 nearly scored. But, you know, there was nothing really towards the end of the game where you thought we're going to score here. It was just sort of trying to chuck whatever we could at it. And all we're doing is coming away with more questions and answers, really. And that was the theme of the sort of discussion from Mowbray, from Neil, who those were the two who were put out of the press, obviously. And it makes next week interesting, and we will do a preview during the week. But, you know, we've got this Birmingham game, which is a strange one, given that, you know, we've got Wayne Rooney in their dugout. We talked about that the other day. Wayne Rooney in their dugout and all the circus that comes along with that. They've had a poor start under him, to be fair. I think they were 2-0 up against Ipswich at the weekend and then tossed it away, end up drawing twos each. You've got to look at this game and think, like, oh, we've got to win this. But coming out of this Swansea game, we're still thinking about who's going to play up front. You know, what's the sort of mood in the camp like? Is he going to bring in Sirkin for the next game? All these things, we've got like quite a lot of sort of questions coming out of this game. And I'm just interested in what the mood's going to be like through the week with training and stuff with regards to that. Because really, you know, you look at our form. Look, we can explain all of them, but since we beat Watford, we've lost to Borough, we've lost to Stoke, we've lost to Leicester, we beat Norwich, and then we've drawn a game we should have won. So that's one win in five games, 4 points. We've got to try and just move on and win this next game, because then we've got another 2 week break. So it's like all this negativity coming out of this game we should have won, we've got to somehow get it out of our heads, haven't we?
Yes and no, but I'm not sure. I mean, again, Tony Mowbray did look miffed off, but I think that was an immediate.
I want to shoot myself in the head after I'd heard him talk.
Oh, no, exactly. But I think was an immediate.
He makes me feel like that most of the time, but especially so after this one.
That was an immediate reaction, and he knew that we should have won that game, and I think he was just miffed off. But you know, and when they get back to it and they really take a look at it, I feel perfectly fine with it. I mean, you're talking about this run, but Borough, you know, red card, Stoke, that was the one.
Yeah.
We talked about it. Leicester did well, Norwich did well. So, I mean, I think, and look, you're talking about progress. We've gone away to a side, and I think they were looking for their sixth win in eight or something like that. They're half decent kind of form, and you look again at just the general progress. We've gone away to Swansea City. We're no mugs. They're a well-organised side. They kind of wiped the floor with us in the first half last season and deserved 3 points off us at their place last year. And you're talking about before the red card, absolutely dominated. There was only going to be one team who won that game. When you're talking about, it was probably skewed a little bit by the sending off. We had 71% possession, I think. But I think without the red card, we have 65% possession easy, if not up to 70 like we did when we were a man up. We completely dominated that game. We've gone to a decent side, and we are the better side. And look, when the keeper makes that save from Roberts when it comes off the post, an inch the other way and it comes off the inside of the post and it spins in the back of the net, and then we're 1-0 and that's it. We've won that game. And it's fine margins. It's football. I mean, you have that game where you have one chance at nick it and the other opposition have 30 shots and 80% possession and all this sort of stuff, or it ends up 0-0 and all that sort of stuff. It's football. These games happen. And I just think the fact that we kind of dominated this game and we should have won, and we're disappointed with going to Swansea City and coming away with a 0-0 draw, you know, and, you know, I might be kind of, people might claim happy clap and all that sort of stuff, but I just think it's progress. You're right. I think a lot of the reaction is skewed a little bit because we're talking about one win in five and all this sort of stuff. But you look, as I just said, you could rattle through those games, and there's only the Stoke City game you can look at and go, yep, that was bad. If it was a run of four or five performances where you go, we've been crap for weeks. If you could say that, I'd be worried. I'd be thinking, shit, you know, we're going in the wrong direction. Something's not quite right here. But I don't think that at all. I think you know, we're making progress. There's things to work on. As I said earlier, you know, with that striker, we're a much better team. I think Roosen getting the games, getting the minutes on the pitch, him staying in the side, I think he'll get better and better. I'm absolutely fine. And I think, you know, yeah, you talked about the Rooney effect and all that sort of stuff. He hasn't had much effect quite yet. But I think we'll do them, and I think it'll be another Norwich City, and you know, we'll do the preview and all this sort of stuff. But my feeling about that comes out of, I'm not concerned because in the main, the performances have been there, and it was here. We nick a goal in this one, and look, we were inches away. I mean, the keeper makes a couple of brilliant saves first half. You know, like I said, an inch the other way, ball spins in, we go 1-0 up, and we coast the rest of the game, and everyone's going, aren't we brilliant? But the thing is, everyone would say, aren't we brilliant? But the only difference is that we hit the back of the net, but the performance is exactly the same. So it's a fine line between everyone saying, it was a bit crap, but, you know, we should have won that. But if we're just getting a goal, but the performance was exactly the same, people are talking about it completely differently.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the performance. Let's talk about the performance and what that is, regardless of kind of whether we managed to nick that goal, because the performance is good and it's plenty to work on.
Good place to end that. Cheers, mate. Thanks for bringing us back up a little bit.
I know, at some point.
We'll be back with a preview during the week. Don't forget to buy our book. You can get the link for that on all our social media, top of all the articles, SAFC 365, which is available for £10 from the Love Supreme shop, both online and in store. Make sure you grab yourself a copy of that. All profits go to Southern Community Soup Kitchen. I don't have any other plugs, so all that's left to say is cheers, mate. Thanks very much.
No worries.
Just the listeners, we'll be back during the week. See you then.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.